Hey, it's Brittany Sierra, and welcome back to the Crash Course Fashion Podcast. In this podcast, we go behind the scenes to explore the multifaceted and often complicated reality of building and scaling a purpose-driven brand. It seems like every day there's another brand, whether they're new or established, that are getting into the sustainability space, which is great for progress, but it also makes it very crowded out there. I've been thinking a lot about what makes a brand truly stand out, with so much noise and so much greenwashing. How can purpose-driven brands stand out? To answer this question, I wanted to chat with my friend Kaylee. Kaylee Rossage is Women's Wear Daily's first ever sustainability reporter, covering the transformation of the fashion industry to sustainability through the lens of the next gen consumer values. In her work, Kaylee has to pay attention and know what's happening in the sustainability space. So I figured if anyone can tell me what makes a brand stand out, Kaylee could. And let me just tell you, recording this episode got a little wild. Between a massive fire that broke out just outside my window to someone deciding to do home renovations literally in the middle of us recording, and Kaylee and I both having a serious case of the Fridays, this episode got a little crazy. So you won't hear everything that went down during the recording. What happens on the podcast stays on the podcast, but I will share some of it just for fun. So if you're down for the ride, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Kaylee. Oh, hey, Kaylee. It's been a while since we spoke. How are you?
I've been moving along. I feel like it's always a check-in of like, what day is it? You know, how am I, you know, every day is different. So I'm trying to kind of be more respectful of that with myself and my own kind of workflow. I've been in New York. I went to a few hand-picked things for Fashion Week and masked up. You know, I had like a little moment where I had a DIY mask and I had vaxxed but shy. And so I was like, that was my big moment. So that was my big, like, you know, street style moment. But no, it's been, I'd say the vibe of New York, I always think back to the onset of the pandemic of, you know, just seeing the kind of creative ingenuity of small business owners of like, you know, setting up shop on the sidewalks and you know, outdoor dining, like that kind of like at all costs, like New York is going to keep its spirit in that, that energy. And I think that's absolutely true. So I'd say that energy carried on into to fall. It's certainly very different, I think. You know, just speaking to a handful of colleagues of just saying like, oh, you know, we're back in it again. And it's hard to process. I think unless you take a step back, it's like, you know, how am I? Well, how are you?
Good question. I feel like every day I'm just kind of like, how am I really? There's been a lot of self-reflection where I've been really like evaluating what I want, what I don't want. Mm-hmm. You know, is this working? Is this not working? And that goes for business and for personal. Like, I was dating this guy for a little bit. And, well, I guess it wasn't really a little bit, but I was dating this guy. And, yeah, it just was not working out. And I wanted so badly for it to work out. And it just, it wasn't. And I think before all of this, I probably would have continued to hold on and continue to be like, no, wait, but actually, this is going to be it. Like, this is, like, my future husband or whatever. And, like, the reality is, no, boo-boo, that is not your future husband. You definitely need
absolutely
to let him go.
The editing, the, you know, the daily edits. And I think I completely hear you on that. I think whereas before I would have been like clutching onto this for dear life, I'm like, I don't have the energy anymore. You know, I would really fight for these, you know, these dates to pan out or things like that. And I'm like, wow, just let it go.
Yeah, for sure. Like, look, if you don't like me, fine. Someone else will. Bye.
This is what I love about podcasts, because we're already like dipping into like relationship and dating talk. And that, if I'm being honest, like asking how I am, I'm like, I did so much of that like content. I've been consuming so much of that content over the past year, and you know, some things better than others. Like I got a meditation app, so I'm like, that was a great thing for me. But ooh, yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think we're kind of looking at the totality of like human life again, and like what we want in our lives and things like that. So,
oh, for sure. And you know, I think at the end of the day, we're human, you know, and we care about sustainability, we care about business, but we're human and we have human experiences. And I think we just want to connect with someone else, you know, like we want to have that shared interest and that shared goal. We want to change the world, but we also just want to connect with each other, which I think is, you know, especially after the past couple of years we've been having, is 100% normal.
I told myself I would quote this properly, but just scrolling through Twitter and seeing another journalist share, you know, a piece of information from an interview. She interviewed a psychologist, and basically the gist of it was that it's going to take us 3 to 4 years to process mentally what we've been through with the pandemic. And I like to kind of share that because it makes me feel better. And I hope it makes others feel better of like, we're all just trying our best. There's an app. I mean, I've been shopping it around because it's that good. It's called Happy Not Perfect. It's just like a meditation app.
Perfect. I'm going
to
write that down.
And it's worth like subscribing to, because you get like a daily affirmation, and like you can do like little like breathing activities. Like, I don't know, sometimes you kind of realize you're like, okay, I need more confidence today. I need to relax. I need this. And you get, and for us productivity fiends, which I know you and I both are, you get the minutes counted for how many little sessions you do. So it's like a nice little like fix.
Yeah. You're like, oh, look, I got a point. Hey, that would totally be me.
Oh yeah. You're going to like it, I think. But, getting back out there, be it dating, business world, like making new connections, socializing, it's a lot. It's and we have to just be honest with ourselves and kind of, you know, and keep a sense of humor, right? I think that's kind of what's gotten me through like many of like stir crazy moments.
Oh my gosh, seriously. And that's honestly why there are so many memes on SFF's Instagram account. It's funny because people think that I make the memes because I am trying to connect with like Gen Z. Which is true. Yeah, I want to connect with Gen Z for sure. But I also feel like it helps to keep me sane, just because sustainability can be so complex, so nuanced, so all the things. And sometimes you just gotta laugh. You do
such a fabulous job at that. I think we need to laugh. And I think again, with the now the backdrop of, you know, Climate Week, the UN General Assembly, COP26 coming up, and, you know, Fashion Week, and all these events and all these things. And then, you know, a really, really harsh report on the climate crisis. And it's like, it's hard to stay positive, but I think
for sure.
we have to find something in there.
Totally. When I was doing my little background stalking sesh on you before our episode, I saw that you founded a magazine called Thrifted Mag. Tell me all about it.
Here.
Oh, that's awesome.
So honestly, I think Thrifted is the reason I got hired at WWD, because I didn't know anyone coming in, and I found the job on LinkedIn. And I originally, not a lot of people know this, I came in from strategic content side. So I kind of made the jump to fully editorial. But I think it was really just kind of like the showmanship of entrepreneurship. So, you know, all throughout my digital media career, you know, I did Her Campus. I did, for a while, I wrote for Ashley Tisdale's blog, which is.
Oh, wow.
I was always kind of doing the digital media thing. But then I have such a love for, you know, print, for physical books. And, you know, I grew up thrifting with my mom. I felt very stifled on campus. I went to I went to Virginia Tech, and at first I was like, oh, you know, like, am I doing the wrong thing? Should I have gone to a fashion school? But I had, you know, the greatest education there, really grounded in the science and business aspect of fashion. But that being said, I still needed like an outlet. So I founded Thrifted Mag, basically on the emphasis of like, fashion needs an overhaul. We need systems change. Also, just not really loving the exclusivity of fashion. Like, you know, who's this really for? Like, you know, always feeling like a little bit like, this is, you know, very pretentious, and like this looks like all about looks, and like who can really be part of this. And so thrifted was an answer to being like, you know, making reuse modern, but also kind of like building our own little like world of fashion. And so thrift ed, and so the reason the E is capitalized, it's like it's basically like thrift editorial, and so that's kind of the full like name. So editorial styled with thrifted garments, and we also did pop-up thrift shops on campus. And I always tell the story of like we sold out our little inventory within like 30 minutes. We had a line all the way around the block in our little college town, wow, downtown center. And, you know, I had a friend the next day say, oh, I thought that was a new bar opening. I'm like, no, that was a little pop-up. And, you know, it just, honestly, like, you don't realize how great of a feeling it is to have kind of like a, you know, build a community from scratch. Like, I think there was clearly a need, and this was, and, you know, back, 2016. So there was a huge demand and need then amongst college students, right? Mm-hmm. And then just seeing again, like fast forward a few years, seeing this kind of like explosion of interest in thrifting and vintage, you know, arguably very, very mainstream and cool now. So it's like just seeing again, like something that I thought was really cool, and then other people thought it was cool. So then we all just had a lot of fun and, you know, a lot of creatives, and still also have that kind of component of like, you know, no, it's such an interesting thing. Like it was honestly an experiment too, right? Of like really playing with like scarcity of like, mm-hmm. And also like an events perspective, but then kind of doing what we wanted, which was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, a lot of that I miss that experimentation and play, and like, you know, no one could really describe the aesthetic, but then you could just latch onto it though. You if you got it, you got it. Like it was just very much like I don't know. Yeah, it thrifted so weird, and I cherish it. It's so close to my heart. Cause I feel like it's one of the things that was truly just like, yeah, me just doing and creating without any barriers, which was so fun.
Do you still produce the magazine? I feel like it could be really popular these days.
When I moved here 3 years ago, I had she's still my friend, my friend and realtor, Marsha. You know, she was like, wow, this is so cool, you should do it here. And I think I just get so intimidated by it for some reason, which I don't know why. But thank you. Yeah, I mean, hey, you never know when or where, but
it'd be so like, cool.
It's like such a gut reaction. It's like, oh, I just feel compelled to do this, and then I'll like jump into it, but who knows?
Yeah,
that's what I love. I love that it's even a surprise to me, you know?
Yeah, oh my gosh. I think that could be so cool. And I mean, my brain just goes a million miles per hour of like all the different places that you could take that and partnerships. And yeah, it could be real cool. Not that it's not cool now, but it's like the fact that you started it before it was the cool thing to do.
Well, thank you. You. I think my mom and I argue back and forth about like, you know, she thinks that I copy her, and I think she copies me. then we're both like, but people are definitely copying us. Like, you know, when you're just kind of like riffing with your parents or your mom or your friend, and you're just like, just being really dramatic.
I love that. It sounds like you and your mom have a relationship that's similar to my mom and I, where we are super close and just kind of laugh and joke about the stupidest, funniest things. So I noticed that you've been writing a lot about secondhand and the resale economy. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's always something going on in the resale space. So what's exciting you about resale right now?
Yeah, I think something really interesting with, you know, brands and retailers getting in the mix. 2020 was a breakout year for brands entering resale, at least 20 companies that I could catalog. But then also within that, the next stage of questions, and I've spoken to circularity experts, I've spoken to climate scientists on this, that next piece of the conversation is going to be about transitioning away from volume-based growth, because resale is meant as a transition against all of this just, you know, vapid production. So that's what we're going to see more of, is that kind of next, you know, chain of evolution. And I was prepping for this conversation yesterday, but then I woke up last night and I was thinking about, like, you know, do I have the answer to this either? You know, do I have the answer to, like, you know, what's the magic number of like, we have to cut this amount to scale back our growth. But then I was thinking, like, we have numbers on the amount of markdowns and the amount of excess stock and dead stock and inventory. Let's start there, honestly.
Yeah. I actually have an episode coming up with Jake Disraeli, the co-founder of Treat. And in the episode, I was asking him if he thought that secondhand actually enabled brands to continue to overproduce because now there's a solution for their excess. And yeah, it's like, it's interesting because the only way, well, in my eyes, the only way that I see resale really being this massive solution is if brands do produce less. But the question becomes, do you think that they would actually do that? I mean, it seems like they would have to find another value. There would have to be some type of value add that would make them produce less. And I don't know, to me, I think the planet is enough value to produce less. But I mean, I don't know, do you think they'll really do that?
Yeah, I think I did a story. We had a pretty stacked resale package. And so the end story of that, to cap off that package was, you know, what is the future of fashion with resale as kind of like the king? Because, you know, we've seen for so long since the 80s and 90s, like fast fashion was the, you know, the force that was driving fashion's growth. But, you know, would the kind of question I posed was like, would resale be a more just ruler? And it's like, but then you dip into that, right? And then it's like, well, think about how, you know, with the kind of idea of like outlet malls, actually, we thought that would be a great way to get rid of excess inventory, but then it ended up being a way to produce new goods at lesser quality to stock those outlet malls. And so, you know, when I was interviewing people for this, I was like, oh, this isn't where I thought it was going to go, you know, because I was like, this is going to be great. We're just going to have a peachy time. We're all just going to wear used clothes. But it's really, you know, so many different scenarios to get to that. And then when you speak to an incredible, you know, knowledge source within the reuse sector, Liz Ricketts, speaking to her, anytime I kind of dip into these kind of like stories, you have to look at, again, waste colonialism. You have to look at equity within the space, because now you're seeing, you know, the resale platforms come in and say, okay, we're only going to take the best stuff. And then everything else, we're not, you know, we're going to outsource it to our donation partners. And then, you know, where does it end up? It ends up in, you know, clothing markets in Ghana, which, speaking to Liz, she can, you know, obviously speak much more eloquently on this. But, you know, then you have just so many factors and lenses in which you examine any scenario. So I think those are the questions I'm kind of like, you know, swirling about. But I think ultimately everyone can agree, like from an environmental and perspective and, you know, from a price comparison, you know, secondhand does really fill that need. But from where it goes from there, it's ultimately like, and I, you know, I want to bring something in. My editor and mentor, my first editor, said to me is that, you know, because I would kind of be like in a like a little knot, like at my desk. I'm like, you know, why is it like this? You know, something I just can't shake. And I'm like, he's like, ultimately, it's greed. You know, so it's like when you kind of come back to things and it's like, okay, will this turn out in a better way? Well, it depends. Are people less greedy? Are people less obsessed with, you know, money and profit? And I mean, time will tell, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Are there any other areas in the sustainable fashion conversation that are really exciting you right now?
Materials are a huge, huge interest. And honestly, what a lot of brands and companies have to be looking at, because yeah, when you think about like, you know, resource scarcity of like, how are you going to get, you can't source the same cotton that you had. You can't get all of this that you had. So I think that's another thing where I just get like obsessed for a bit and like dive right in. And I think, I don't know if you've seen like the mushroom leather, I'm just going to call it. It's really like, abbreviated name, mycelium. I can't wait to share this story with you, but it's I did a huge textile story that I think will come out next week. Basically like an A to Z textile library of like all the next gen materials. So I think,
wow.
Yeah. And I think when I think about like my reporting style, I think honestly, you mentioned me being like ahead of something. I think that's kind of where I like to stay, like, but not from a, like a narrow trend perspective, but from like what's going to move the needle, right? What's important to look at, being on the cusp of like Gen Z, depending on which source you're looking at, like, I think the Census Bureau will say that I'm technically the last millennial, but then other sources will say that I'm Gen Z. So I'm like, so I think that's kind of been, you know, early on in my reporting career, that's kind of been like an angle for me of like, you know, doing things in a different way or like looking ahead. Sides. So yeah. I think that's kind of where I like to plant myself.
It's funny that there is different reports of whether or not you're Gen Z or a millennial. I feel like that is like, isn't that the story of sustainable fashion? Like where there's one report that says this, another report that says that. And it's like, wait, but which is it though? You know, like who knows really? I think it's really powerful that you sit in between millennials and Gen Z because you're able to understand potentially, you know, both sides of both groups. And especially right now, everyone is trying to understand Gen Z and what Gen Z wants and how could we connect with Gen Z. So that's super powerful. Mm-hmm. When I think about sustainability and I think about potential solutions and what's really going to push fashion forward, I really think that the solutions are going to be found in the intersections and not necessarily millennials, Gen Z, but a lot of times I think when people think of sustainability, it's a this or that, you know, this fabric or that fabric, this solution or that solution. For me, when I think about sustainability and I think about like the solutions that are truly going to move us, get us somewhere, I don't think of it as this or that. I think of it as this and that. And so I always love a good intersection and I always love to think about it from, or I try to think about sustainability and even the way that I approach, you know, building our community at the Sustainable Fashion Forum is really about that intersection and trying to see things from multiple points of view and not just thinking in a linear way. And so I'm curious, how does being in that space between Gen Z and millennial, how does that inform the way that you approach sustainability and how you write about sustainability and your style? Like how does being in that space influence your work?
It's a great question. I think, you know, having a kind of bigger picture and really being, you know, a systems thinker helps me because I can, you know, zoom out, but then also get really into the details, into the weeds on certain things on like when I'm looking at reports. And I think, I know, I think honestly, anyone who is curious and committed to asking the right questions, like that's all you need really. As long as you're curious and you keep asking questions, like that'll help make information more digestible. And then from there, again, you just stay really objective. I think I try to, again, as a, you know, a journalist, you really stick to the facts. And it's the more you do this, the more you ask these questions, you get really familiar with, you know, ESG reports, for example, which sounds really nerdy and often it is. But, you know, I don't mind going, you know, really broad, but then also going really deep. And then from there, it's like, you catch on to certain things of like, okay, well, this is why this is important. And my editor kind of jokes, she's like, you know, you're really good at kind of like latching onto the thing that no one else is looking at. But that's so important. And so from there, I feel like, again, these are mammoth companies with a lot of value creation, right? A huge impact environmentally, socially. So if you can, you know, bring something to their awareness and really honestly kind of drill them on it, it's a lot, it's fun. It's more fun than it sounds. And I think, and they'll actually, like, I've seen so many occasions where executives really take it to heart and they want to do better or their companies want to do better. And, you know, we have to remember that there's people inside of all these organizations. And I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's a malintent often. I think people really do want to do the right thing. And it's sometimes it's just like sharing and, you know, honestly, just being detailed and just bringing it to attention.
Sustainable fashion can be a really, aggravating conversation, if I'm being honest, because, you know, for every good thing or every right step every step in the right direction, there's always a yeah, but, you know what I mean? Like, we're doing this, 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 and this. Yeah, but what about this? Or we're doing this, 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 and this. Yeah, but what about this? Or we're using this fabric. Yeah, but that. We're doing this thing. Yeah, but that. There's always a yeah, but. And that can get really frustrating. And also can kind of make you feel like you're not creating change, or like you're not doing enough, I guess. And from you as a reporter who's reporting on these sustainability initiatives, you know, your job is to tell the whole story, not just a piece of the story. And so I'm curious, how do you report on sustainability? How do you hold brands accountable for the yeah buts while also remaining optimistic and being, I guess, excited? I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, like, how do you hold them accountable but at the same time remain optimistic about the progress that's being made and how fashion is changing?
To hold companies accountable, to hold anyone accountable, it does go back to asking the right questions, which anyone could do. I think citizens, consumers, people, we can ask these questions. Like, I think, you know, if you do see a company announce they're, you know, they want to be net zero by 2050, for example, you know, you can ask, okay, what's your progress to date? You know, what have you done as far as, you know, reducing your carbon footprint? What have you done on materials, right? So I think another thing that appears often in the headlines is we're moving towards more responsible or more recycled sources or more sustainable cotton. And it's like, what does any of that mean? I think asking the question of like, okay, what, you know, this is such a, I use this one all the time. And anything that I do, when there's a material angle, it's like, okay, what's your material mix by percentage? So how much cotton are you using? How much, you know, polyester? Like, what, you know, what is your material mix? You know, people asking those questions from the consumer level too, it's really helpful, and to create more transparency across the industry. So I think that's another great question. And yeah, I think the more pestering, the better. And the more, I think it's hard, because I think you mentioned a point about, you know, if all of a sudden everyone's moved past that and we're not awarding every company or clapping for them every time that they make their goals too, it's kind of like you have to look at it from the perspective of like, should we really be clapping anyways? Like, should we really even be championing something that should just be the bare minimum, or just the you know, just the bare minimum for being a business? It's like,
I never thought about it like that, but you are so right. Should we really be applauding and celebrating brands for doing what they should have already been doing? Definitely something to think about.
You know, even just reporting on a company, I think it was Primark, you know, they came out with the tandem goals on social and environment. But I thought it was so interesting that the social goals did not have a timeline, right? So you really can't come in and say, hey, you said you were going to promise this last year and, you know, time's up. Where's the fair wages? There's no timeline. So it's like things like that. You, again, when you're really, you know, getting a closer look at things, that's what stands out to me. So, and I think that's, again, that's another question you can ask as a consumer, as a concerned citizen, of like, are you paying fair wages? And it's like, we are, but it's like, then what are those wages, and what's your top sourcing countries? Like, you can really just have so much fun with this and just get further and further in, not to back up anyone against the wall, but, you know, just honestly, just get the truth. And I think that's ultimately why it's so important, again, just to ask questions.
Speaking of standing out, the sustainable fashion landscape is incredibly saturated. It's incredibly noisy, incredibly crowded. There are tons of brands and more brands that are popping up every single day. What stands out to you? Like, what makes a brand stand out in the eyes of a sustainability reporter?
Yeah, I think honestly, leading with data and, you know, or a trending angle, if it is something that, again, I think just the workflow of this industry, the way it works is like, honestly, it's, you get so many emails, so many things just flutter past, and you have to pick and choose for your own sanity. Like, I think I'd love to say that I could read everything that comes through and I can give it proper attention, but I really think it's more important for me to focus on what I can really review and look into and make sure that I have time to like think and process what I'm looking at. Cause I think that's a huge, you mentioned earlier greenwashing and the media's role in that. I think, the sad fact is that you're not having the time to look at things. It's like you can really help spread disinformation or just generalize things that are more complex and nuanced. So I think what stands out to me is obviously I try to pepper in, big industry facing initiatives and brand changes because, they have the scale versus, and also with, brand new labels that just launched and are doing things really, really holistically and circular from the get-go. That's so interesting to me. And, or they have like an angle that's important, right? To me personally, like, they are, black owned, a vintage seller that's been doing things way before everyone else, like really just kind of latching onto those stories and telling those stories. It's important. Having a balance, I think, is really important in anything. And also novel innovations. I'm a bit of a nerd. So I think, materials and, resale, how all of that works in the back end. I think that's exciting to me. Mm-hmm. If I think standing out, honestly, I do have a recent example that made me laugh. So I had this really great pitch, right? I was like, mm-hmm. They led with data. They made it relevant to New York Fashion Week, which just was happening. And then I realized, I was like, wait a minute, is this my story? And so they pulled my story. And I was like, wow, I don't know if they knew that that was my story. But again, it has those components that I like, right? Leading with data, being a trending angle. And then it's like, I mean, nothing is better to a journalist's ears than like, hey, I read your story, and like being honest about it. Like, I think I really do respond when it's a genuine note of like, I love your feedback on this, or like, I don't mind any follow-ups because it actually is important if something did truly get lost. Mm-hmm. But I think, I think if it's important to you, if it's important to the public, like it, ultimately that's going to rank priority. And I think, again, an element of personalization or leading with data is always what grabs my attention. But I also think timing is everything. And I think I hate to say that, but I think personally for me, Thursdays and Fridays are kind of like a sleeper day, where not like a sleeper day, but like a day where I'm really looking for things to kind of set me up strong for the next week, especially since the way our sustainability scene works, which publishes weekly, it's a weekly section and it runs on Wednesdays. I think for me to kind of get a head start Thursday, Friday, it's really important. So it's a really good time to send me something. And then, Monday, Tuesday are also like, under deadline, but if it's something really urgent, I'm definitely going to jump on it. So I think timing, data, trending angles are what's going to stick out, at least in my own perspective. I did write down a little stat because I'm like, this is important to convey. I think I don't want anyone to feel disheartened in the PR community, but I do want to shed some light on the facts for journalists, because I think we're really trying to hold on here. And I think, it's a media is a turbulent industry. So I think, patience and compassion, matter more than ever. And I think just a stat that I pulled up from the Census Bureau, from the U.S. Census Bureau in 2019, journalists are outnumbered like 6-1. So I think that's so important, because you think if those six people send 3 follow-up emails, and it's like you're quickly up to like 20 emails. And I think just having like a perspective again of like, everyone's trying to do a good job. And for something like sustainability in fashion or any industry, you really need to have like, you really need to be clear-eyed and able to process and digest some things that are actually really intensive to look at. So I think, that's my little spiel on like, as journalism is already kind of like hanging on by a thread, it's hard when you feel truly outnumbered. But I think if we can all just keep that in mind, if we are trying to like know, get stories across, and you know, storytelling is ultimately so important to everyone, but
yeah. Oh my gosh, I have to show you something.
Okay, I gotta see this.
Look at this. There is a fire, like a massive fire happening outside of my window.
Right oh now. My god, how are you like processing? You're so can I just say, anyone listening, she's still navigating this interview with ease. I don't even know if this is gonna get cut, but this is truly remarkable.
I was like trying to pay attention to what you were saying, and like the smoke is just getting more and more intense, and I was like, oh my
god. No, gosh. I want you to be safe. I think I worry. I'm worried. Yeah, you gotta.
I mean, I can't do anything about it. I'm just praying that everyone is okay and that everyone is safe, and that how crazy is this episode?
So, I'm honestly really thrilled for this to come out, because I think, honestly, podcasts are truly on an uptick over the pandemic. So how are you going to stand out in the podcast world, Brittany? And that's what I think you've done and demonstrated.
Oh yeah, if there's a prize, I definitely win, because I am so dedicated to this podcast that I am still recording in the middle of there being a massive fire diagonally from my window. Oh my god.
You think it's climate crisis related?
No, there's a freeway that's across the street from me, well, like diagonally from me, and it's coming from that direction, but I don't see any cars on the freeway that are like on fire, and traffic is moving normally. So I think it's like underneath the freeway. I don't know actually, but it's just like a massive billowing of cloud, or not clouds, but like flame, not flames, smoke. dark
oh,
smoke.
God, okay. It truly speaks to the chaos that is, you know, right? We have the kind of backdrop of, like, again, climate week. We have today was a the anniversary of the global youth climate strike, and there's over 80 countries participating today, wow. On, you know, Friday, September 24th. So I think, again, to have this chaos like just thrown into the podcast, it really speaks to the reality, the climate reality.
Oh, I love this. I love
how that's one thing that the team trained me on when moderating, you know, events or things like that. Like, whereas some things it's like, oh, that was so out of alignment. I'm like, this is all in alignment.
I feel like at this point you should just tell me what your plans are for the weekend, because I don't know if there's going to be any more recording. At this point, we're pretty much just hanging out.
We're just hanging out. Well, I have a friend's birthday, so I think we're going to, you know, they used to be my old neighbors, but they sadly moved just a little bit further away. But we're going to get together to celebrate his birthday.
How fun.
Get a few drinks or a dinner. But yeah, I feel like I've got to get to the Met or to the Dior exhibit, though. I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of my colleagues have been and like been posting on Instagram. I'm like, I have to get here. I have to have my own take.
Yeah, for
sure. I always enjoy like a museum Sunday type situation.
Cool. I wish Portland was cooler.
Come on, sell it. Let's hear. What's it, hiking or anything?
Yeah, hiking is definitely a Portland thing, but no, I'm not going hiking. I'm just going to live vicariously through you and pretend like I'm in the city and I'm doing something cool. The last time I was in New York, I think I was in middle school, and I won a contest. Do you remember 17 magazine?
Oh, yes.
I've never won anything before, and I've actually never won anything since this happened either, but I won a trip to New York during Christmas time, so it was amazing. And then I also got to go to a concert, and I went to Avril Lavigne. Don't judge me.
My punk heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's should have so seen fun. How I was dressing back then. I was very confused, but but yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest, little late for this call, because I had like a graphic t-shirt on that said, it was like a motorcycle t-shirt that I honestly have had forever, and it said mount up, and it was like, but you couldn't if I had the shirt on, you wouldn't be able to see like the full context. So I was like, oh, we gotta change this up, because, you know, if we're gonna be on, you know, if we're gonna end up doing the video aspect, I gotta.
Yeah, no, next people, time. Next time I have to see this
t-shirt.
We'll
dip into that next time.
All right, well, I'm gonna hold you to it, and next time I'm gonna play some Avril Lavigne in the background. It's gonna be a whole vibe.
We'll have the background noise on full blast.
Oh my gosh, yes. I'll just ask them to come in here and start like doing maintenance on something.
Yeah. We'll really do it up. That'll just be the kind of cathartic experience.
All right. Well, when I show up on your doorstep, you better open the door.
I can't wait. I'm excited again. I'm excited again. Plans.
I thought I should tell you that no one was harmed in the making of this podcast episode. And I'm still not really sure what was going on with that fire, but from what I understand, everyone is safe, so we're good. I did want to say a quick thank you to you for listening to this podcast, for sharing this podcast with your friends and on social. I see you. I see you sharing, and it really makes my day. As always, thanks so much for listening. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. And if you like memes, be sure to follow us on Instagram at The Sustainable Fashion Forum for a good laugh and to see what episodes are coming up next.